CliffCentral.com.
All right, there we go. That's One Way or Another from CS favorite band One Direction. Isn't that nice?
Yes, they are.
Isn't that nice? Good morning. It is Poor Zathes Day on CliffCentral.com. And if you've just joined us, if you've just woken up, if you just press play on the podcast, we are going to tell you what's going on in the world. Justice Malala coming in a moment or two to give us an expert analysis on this bizarre, crazy world that we live in. He's the only guy that seems to make sense, and he takes none of it seriously. I mean, he does. Occasionally, he does. I remember looking at Justice a couple of times when he was talking about the Esidimani story and stuff like that, and he doesn't have a sense of humor about those, and rightly so. But, you know, most of the time, he can find the fun in all the stupidity. Mm. Thank God. That's why we love having him here.
On a equally serious note, though,
yeah,
Charlie Sheen says that he knows who has HIV in Hollywood.
Well, because he gave it to them.
Well, that's the thing. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. He obviously hasn't been in the news for a while, right? Yeah. No, I think it was 2015 he revealed he had HIV.
Mm-hmm,
and then you've heard nothing about him because no one cares about him anymore. Well, now he says, like, yeah, well, it's not just me. There's a whole bunch of people. I know who they are. He hasn't revealed any names.
Well, come on, Charlie. You can't tease us like that. Tell us who.
Yeah, isn't that against the law?
Well, completely. But the thing is, like, the question
you
is...
You can't reveal.
The question is, what does a guy like this do now?
Law schmorf.
Like, what does a guy like this do now? Everyone knows he has HIV. He's getting on a bit. Everyone's kind of tired of him anyway, HIV aside. So he's just like, he must be the most bored person on earth.
Yeah, you know, I would think with all the money that he's made that he could find ways to keep himself amused. But this attention thing is like an addiction, hey?
Mm.
People really are addicted to being in the news, to having the rest of us talking about them every single day.
Yeah.
It's a big problem. And Charlie Sheen wants to be relevant again. He wants us to be. He wants this. He wants us to talk about him, and we are right now.
I think Charlie Sheen did this because he found out we were talking about Misha Barton, and he realizes now that Misha Barton's the biggest story.
She's not the only has-been out here.
He sees a gap and he wants some attention.
But it is. It's this unquenchable thirst these people have.
He usually sees a gap and puts his penis in it. That's what he does.
Well, that too. Look, I suppose. I suppose if you spent the greater part of your career having been adorned and being worshipped at your feet and having every person tell you, oh, Charlie, you're amazing, or Charlie, have sex with me. And then now that nobody's interested, I suppose he feels I want it back.
It must be so hard to comprehend this because we could never understand his highs, right?
I just want to get into one thing here quickly because it strikes me as strange. Like, why would Charlie hold that carrot up and say to people, oh, I know who has HIV in Hollywood, and I'm not going to tell you. It's like those people who go, I know that X and Y is sleeping with Z and W's wife. It's or I know that J or Q or whoever is secretly going down on X's wife when no one's looking. What is it with people they need to do that? Like, where's your moral compass?
Our moral compass.
Exactly. What kind of person gets off on, first of all, not even revealing it, but saying that they know it? Like, they've got superior knowledge.
Our moral compass.
Exactly.
is this like a warning shot to people who give them shit? And they go, hang on a second, I know.
It's almost like it's like you're telling people, well, I might tell.
Yeah.
You better be nice to me. And I'm the big swinging dick, and if you don't respect my authority, I'm going to tell other people who you're sleeping with, or who's got HIV, or who's gay, or whatever it might be. I mean, it's just crazy, right? It's unnecessary. What kind of person does that?
Like, this is actually low for Charlie himself. It's not that I had high expectations him.
For someone who's so low to start with, this is a very low move. I have no time for people who do that. You know, when someone says to me, I've got gossip on this one, I've got gossip on that one, I want to leave the room. I don't go, ooh, tell me. Now, I know lots of people. See, it does. I know lots of very nice people do. But I'm not
standing upright.
I'm not into gossip. I really, to me, all you're doing is you're so excited about other people's lives that you're admitting there's less going on in yours. That's really what you're saying. You know, it's the same as watching the Kardashians. It's the same thing. Is you're you're admitting quietly, and I'm not saying this is bad or good. Mm. I'm just expressing how I see the whole thing objectively, as objective as it's possible to be. When you are more interested in Kim or Chloe or anyone else's life, even though you don't know
Courtney,
them.
Courtney, Kendall, Kylie, Rob, Chris.
Those ones.
Caitlin.
There we thank you for that. If you're more interested in them than you are in talking about what's going on in the person you're talking to's life or your own, you've got to question why you're even sitting there. I could think of 1,000 things I would rather do than gossip. And I know there are evolutionary reasons why we gossip, particularly why women have an evolved sense of gossip. Men not so much, because we would not talk to each other while we were hunting. But the women would sit, and it was important for them to share information. They needed to know what was going on so that they could keep the tribe together, right? Protect the children and not steal each other's husbands or have each other's husbands try to steal them. You know what I mean? Women had to communicate, and gossip kept the tribe alive. Because if you knew that Og over there was – he was a dick, and he was the one who was costing the tribe one extra antelope every month because he was slow and stupid, it was important to know that so you could get rid of Og. Gossip used to be really, really important, but not now. Now it's like it's a sad, primitive device left over from the infancy of our species.
But I still like that point of view. I'm keeping society alive.
You basically want to know who Charlie Sheen is talking about.
No, you see, that honestly is just another low. Because I'd honestly expected that maybe Charlie was disclosing his status. Because firstly, honestly, we could have stayed speculating for the longest amount of time. He did not have to come out with his HIV status. And I thought maybe really trying to see the silver lining here, that he'd come out and he'd try to reform and he'd try to be a better person. You know, he was trying to boost his public image. But he's still the same jackass as ever. So, please spare us, Charlie.
All right. I still think Sia wants to know.
No.
Yeah. All right. He has a good question from Hugo. He says, hey, Gareth, can you please try to explain to me how government would create jobs? How do you create a job? I never understood it. Also, have you noticed how the citizens and business owners of this country step in times of disaster, like the fires in Cape Town or the drought of the farmers in the Karoo? The government don't seem to be able to do anything. Well, yes, Hugo. That's a good point. It's a very good point. Good morning. Yesterday's podcast had a different, refreshingly light energy. Could it have had something to do with the dumping of the political talk? Keep it up and let's find out. That's from Eloise. And Ramon says, random one, any chance we could invest in Cliff Central itself? This is my only sanity living in a small town. So brainless, not want to be part of it. Had to ask. Love your work. Hugo, you know, I wish we'd thought of this when we started. We could have listed the company or something when we started. But
Anthea did say many occasions.
She did, actually. She really did. I should have listened to her then already. I've learned. Now I listen to her. But we should have done that at the start. Someone says they think that what Charlie's really admitting is that he's dying. And maybe this is like him trying to be relevant before he goes. That would be
sad.
Yeah,
it is that. It is very sad.
If you care about being relevant,
yeah, don't
as
do
opposed
this.
To
go out on a high,
yeah, meeting, like low. Spending more time with your kids, or I don't know, like creating a legacy for your family. That's sad. Like,
what's wrong, Mubs? Why are you laughing? Do you think Charlie Sheen is funny?
I just think
Justice Malala's funny.
The way that Justice walked in now, like a nervous
Pink Panther.
Like a nervous school kid who's walking into a teacher's classroom and he's late.
How are you, Mr. Malala? It's nice to see you, man. I feel like I haven't seen you in weeks. Huh? It does feel like it's been weeks. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Here he is, Justice Malala, everybody. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's, powered by Nando's, and just after this, Justice is going to go and eat some Nando's for breakfast. It's fiery hot some mornings. Some mornings it's lemon and herb. Some mornings it's mild. How are we doing this week? How's the political landscape this week?
Ah, you know, it's same old, same old, same old, same old. But I'm quite encouraged by the fact that by the fact that the ANC has its National Executive Committee meeting over the next few days.
Oh.
And
do you think something might come of it?
Why are you such a hopeful chap?
No.
All this traveling.
Well, no, Justice, I just know that they had one a while ago, and nothing came. And they pretended that they'd had a real talk shop, and they decided to fight the demons in the ANC and discover who they really were and talk about the reasons they might have lost the municipal elections in so many important metros. But they came out with no changes, no plan, and a whole lot of hot air.
Yeah. You know, guys, can I tell you something? Can I just segue a bit from what we're going to talk about and just say, you know, on March 21, on Human Rights Day, on Tuesday, you know, I listened to people saying the ANC has done this, it's terrible, and it's failed, and it's this, and everyone, and, you know, young people like Sia, the woke people, talking about suddenly the PAC was amazing, and Biko was amazing, and the ANC was like, no one, everyone was hating on the ANC. And I felt so sentimental about the ANC that day, like,
shame. It used to be something.
Like these guys, you know, they won the struggle. Where was the PAC then?
Well,
anyway.
But you know, Justice, I mean, one of the things I've always been quite upset about is the fact that not necessarily the PAC, because, you know, post the 90s, they didn't really, in fact, even earlier than that, they didn't really have the force they needed to make any powerful impression.
Yeah.
But people like Robert Sobukwe, who was a giant of his time, way ahead of his
time. Amazing mind.
An amazing mind. Someone who contributed far more to the struggle than some of the leaders that we now regard as being the stalwarts of the struggle. You know, and this man suffered probably more than all of them.
Yeah, you had to be special for the apartheid regime to build you a
separate dwelling.
Yeah, on Robben Island.
I mean, it was no luxury accommodation, and he wasn't allowed to talk to anyone. Anybody. Do you know how dangerous they must have thought you were?
Yeah.
To do that to you. But Robert Sobukwe is getting a little bit of attention. It's taken a long time, but he's starting to get a little bit of attention because he should be up there with Steve Biko.
No, he should be. And you know, you think about, you know, before he went into Robben Island, after he came out, continued to be an incredible, incredible man. I mean, there's a book that South Africans should read. I think it's written by the former Rand Daily Mail journalist, Benjamin Pogrand. I'm trying to remember the name. I think it's called... I'll remember in a minute. But okay. Benjamin Pogrand's book is a biography of Sobukwe, and it was written in the 80s. And he'd spoken to him before the man died. It's an amazing book. Hmm. And I find it amazing. It's still being printed today because people keep on going back to that book to understand the time, but also to understand the man and his ideas. They're a very, very powerful book. I think it's called This Is How Men Should Live. And it's Benjamin Pogrand. It's an amazing, amazing book. Anyway, all I'm saying is shame the ANC, man. When I have to feel sorry for the ANC on Human Rights Day because no one else.
How
can man die better? That's the book.
There we go.
Beautiful book. Amazing book. But it will give you the soul and essence of Sobukwe. Anyway, where did we start? Okay, the ANC is going to its National Executive Committee. And there's a lot going on. You know, we spoke about this. Some among us were not here. But, you know, Ben and I and Mabale and I were in the studio last week, you know.
Yes.
And we spoke and we had a very nice chat about Andile Lungisa, who used to be the head of the NYDA. And who you'll remember, is the guy who... Wait, who did he bring again, the singer?
You said R. Kelly. I don't – oh no, he didn't actually bring the singer, did he?
Yeah, so – no. He said, I'm bringing R. Kelly. And everyone was, R. Kelly's coming. Here's your 2 million rand to bring R. Kelly here, or however many millions. And then they waited and waited. And waited. And R. Kelly never fished that. Anyway, that's Andile Lungisa. So Andile Lungisa gets told by Gwede Mantashe, don't stand for the chairpersonship of the ANC in Nelson Mandela Bay. He writes him a letter outlining that this is a rule of the ANC. You just don't do it because you're in the provincial executive. Andile Lungisa says, go jump in the lake or in the Mbashi River. I don't care. I'm standing. And he stands and he wins. On the Sunday that he wins, President Jacob Zuma jumps into his jet, flies off from Pretoria, lands in Nelson Mandela Bay and says, the ancestors have said this is the right thing to do and congratulates Andile Lungisa.
Huh.
So the president of the ANC.
That's an interesting move. Like the president can really shake his tail when he needs to, huh?
Yeah,
hops on a jet, flies there just to congratulate the guy.
Yeah.
Wow. What a move.
But he's congratulating a guy who's broken the rules of his own organization here.
Right.
And so you've got to say, what's going on when your secretary general says, don't do it? Your top six says, don't do it. But the president of the organization goes and says, well done, my man.
Mm.
So there's a bit of a thing going on there. And it's called division. So the ANC NEC is going to discuss this matter, and we'll see who wins. If Andile Lungisa remains the chairperson of the ANC Nelson Mandela Bay, you must know, if you're reading the tea leaves, that Jacob Zuma is still powerful and is still in charge of the organization, and he can basically impose and break the rules as he wishes, because that's the faction that wants to see him in there. If Andile Lungisa is told by the NEC when it concludes on Saturday that, aye, Baba, you've got to step down, there's no way you're standing in, then you know that the Guedemantashe Cyril Ramaphosa faction
has prevailed.
So it will be interesting to see what happens there. The other thing that should be on the agenda, that will be on the agenda, but how it's handled will be interesting, is the fact that all of us have been talking about the SASSA social grant scandal for the past, well, we started talking about it here 8 months ago,
mm-hmm.
But some started talking about it a month ago.
Right.
Whatever happens, to have the judges essentially taking over the running of a government department because the minister is useless, is extraordinary. So the ANC has to discuss this and say what happens now. And it will be interesting to see whether the ANC will say, our own minister failed, and President Zuma, it's time for you to remove her from her seat.
I asked this question earlier this morning because I'm perplexed by how, to me, it seems fairly straightforward and simple, but for some reason government seem to find this whole thing very complicated. Surely something like social grants is something that government should be able to build the infrastructure and administer themselves.
Mm.
Not for profit,
yeah,
but just to do what they've promised the people of this country they would do.
Mm.
Keep a social safety net for the very poorest of the poor.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of money, but these people need this money to survive. Mm. So if you as the government are going to do it, and it's not sustainable, we know 16 to 17 million people can't keep taking grants forever. They've got to become productive members of society. They've got to be employment opportunities for them, etc. But that's what we've got, for better or for worse, right?
Yeah.
Justice?
Yeah.
So now, if we want to make this system work, it shouldn't be outsourced to a private company that then for profit makes over R1 billion, we're led to believe.
Mm. By 1.6 billion.
By the Constitutional Court. Now, operating profit's a different thing. We wouldn't have a problem with that necessarily. But what government are really admitting is, we can't do this. We don't have the means, the capacity, or the competence to do this. So we're going to give it to a business that runs on profit, let them skim a huge amount of the cream, and the people who are owed the money might still not even get it because of our incompetence.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like a new level of incompetence.
It's not only can't you do it yourself, you endanger the contract that gives others the ability to do it.
And I can't imagine a more important duty for the minister in that department. This is probably the only thing she has to make sure she does.
And she found it that all she has to do is continue with it,
yeah,
in a way that doesn't make us all jump up and down. But you weren't here, Gareth. One of the best things said by Chief Justice Mokgweng last week in the proceedings
I just wanted to get that thing.
Was that, was a question he asked, and he said, how did we get here? How did we get to this level of incompetence? And you should just, it's a, like a 3-second clip in which essentially all the frustration, all the questions that all of us have been asking are encapsulated in that. How do you get to a situation where you display such incompetence, where people look at you and say, oh my word. And that's where we got. That's where we got with the SASSA issue. And so, you know, for the ANC, I don't know if the party, its young leaders realize, but this is the sort of thing that just, it's called corrosion. And for people who've lived, in seaside towns where, you know, you park your car there, after a year, suddenly it's, you know, just the weather, the water, the seawater just eats into the matter. And that's what's happening with the ANC. And this is just another bit of that. It adds, you know, down the line, something comes along, a scandal around President Zuma or someone else, and it just adds to that, and it just keeps on eating away at the organization. And I think that's something the ANC just needs to realize. It will happen. It's slow, but it happens. And one day you're looking out your window, and there's your rusty car. It's not blue or white or whatever. It's a totally different animal.
That's a scary thing to think about, that we can have a rusty car sitting outside the window. Yeah. I mean, is that the one future that could be on the cards for us?
Oh, it's a future. The one thing though is that other people are buying a new car and are looking after it a little bit better.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing is that yes, the corrosion is going on, but someone else will come. Sia will come and park their new car right by the rusty car. And people start saying, no, I'm not going in the rusty car. I'm going in Sia's car. And that's, you know, election 2019. That's election 2021. And there's election 2024, which in my view will be a real election in South Africa and will have some interesting coalitions and certainly outcomes.
You know,
but we go in there.
The two stories I want to address this morning, because I think you'll be the only person who can sensibly give us some idea of what we should be doing instead of these two stories, because they both don't really have an impact on our daily lives, but we're obsessed with them. The one is this incident at Spur where two rude people started having a go at each other. It's just the display of the worst kind of manners in society. And the other one is Helen Ziller. And of course, the Helen Ziller comments are important because she's still Premier of the Western Cape.
Yeah.
And what she says,
and a powerful leader in the DA.
And what she says has an impact on the way we think of ourselves and the political parties in this country and all the rest. But essentially, neither of them really. I mean, Helen Ziller, God bless her, she doesn't have as much of an impact as she did when she was leader of the DA, for example. I'm interested in why it's so easy to distract South Africans with a fight in a Spur. It seems like it's really easy. We've got Tom Moyane and SARS at the moment. He owes lots of us lots of money in refunds.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about that story.
Yeah, no.
We've sort of got bored with Batabile now because there isn't enough drama around it. But the Spur incident will get us fired up because there's a race war.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it, and I listened to people talking, and I read the letters, pages in newspapers, just to get an idea of what people are thinking and writing. And these are educated people; they can at least knock off an email to a newspaper or to a radio station. I think there are two things. One, first of all, see, I don't know if you've got any contacts with the DA and with the Premier.
Always just on standby, Justice.
Thank you.
Speed dial, even.
Thank you. Now, will you just make sure I see the new Nokia's come back?
Can they give that to Helen?
Please. Because Helen has been trolling her own party leaders for years now. So she'll say something incredible on Twitter, And Musi Maimane has to sit there squirming like a schoolboy because he, you know, it's, oh, but you know, the teacher said this and oh, what am I going to do now? And everyone is looking at him now and saying, gee, Musi Maimane, what are you going to do? She said this. It's offensive. It's offensive in the extreme. Da, da, da. And, she comes back from her trip to Singapore, writes a long, beautiful piece actually about Singapore and how amazing and how you can turn around a nation in 35 years. Ends up at the very end by blaming the people who are angry for their anger. And they're like, get off, you know, what are you doing?
So they just gotta, she's gotta close her account. It's just not good for anyone. It's not good for her.
It's terrible. So if you can do something about that, my brother, just get the new 20, what are they called?
2310.
Yes, one of those.
Yeah, don't we like the hypocrisy here too? Like we expect Musi Maimane to be responsible for Helen. But then people say that he's her puppet. You know, make up your mind as well here.
This is a free agent.
This man doesn't have to be responsible for delinquent tweets.
He doesn't have to be. And the issue here, I mean, Helen Zille is speaking to Glynis Breitenbach, who's the head of legal something in the DA. Mm. And she will map a way forward for a hearing of some sort for her. But I think Helen Zille herself is a leader, has been a leader of the DA, has been a useful leader for the DA. She went from 12% to 22%. Mm-hmm. You know, very forceful. There is no doubt that Helen Zille also still has significant amounts of support and power inside the DA. So for Musi Maimane and others, it's a problem that the party still belongs in large measure to her. That there are people who still back her rather than Musi Maimane. And so, her blessing, becomes a big chunk of what Musi Maimane is in the DA. But Musi Maimane, I said this with the Diane Colabana issue and I'll say it with her as well. Musi Maimane needs to, if the gains that the DA is beginning to make among particularly the black middle classes, it's not huge, but it's there. If those are to be preserved and grow, Helen Zille either has to be a leader herself and say, you know what, thank you very much. I'm going to put this phone away. I'm going to say to see how, hook me up with that 2310.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stop tweeting. I'm going to stay on message. Because when it comes to the DA and its policies on race, on transformation, on black economic empowerment, on employment equity, she is not just an ignoramus. She's been left behind by new ideas, new nuances on ideas. And she shouldn't even get herself into that. So what she's doing is that she's exposing a seam of thought in the DA that is very unattractive to so many people. So one of the big questions about the DA is whether it has a ceiling on support or black support in particular. And these kinds of things lead to her, they just put the new leadership. Whether it's,
well, she said something interesting, and I want your opinion on this, please. She said that the DA is trying to be more ANC than the ANC in order to get those votes, which is what you're talking about. Do you think there's a danger that by moving more and more to the ANC's position on things, which the DA, you can, I mean, it's much of a muchness a lot of the time between the DA and the ANC. Do you think that they're in danger of giving up liberal principles and adopting some kind of a nationalism?
The problem with, I think her analysis is that one, to the point you're making, is that Helen Zille doesn't seem to realize that the DA and the ANC are very similar.
Mm.
That the ANC in practice has been a liberal party.
Mm.
That the ANC gets the ANC has a struggle credential and a and exile and so forth and so forth. And that gives it the ability to stand next to Nelson Mandela, to stand next to Fidel Castro or to Muammar Gaddafi and say, yes, we will defeat the capitalist forces and so forth. Mm. But what the ANC says on a public platform and what it's done in the 23 years in power are totally different things. Thabo Mbeki was the biggest capitalist probably. And oversaw a capitalist revolution in this country. And so what, how would the DA have run the economy, have run society and so forth? It would have run it pretty much
like the ANC.
Like the ANC, maybe, or the maybe, ANC in power.
Maybe with less cadre deployment, but otherwise the same.
For me, I think the key to what she's saying is in that African nationalist perspective. And the ANC has always had communists, socialists, capitalists out and out, and African nationalists. Remember that Robert Sobukwe walked out of the ANC after the writing of the Freedom Charter. He was an African nationalist.
And maybe just as what you're saying, I'm sorry to short-circuit this, but I've just had a thought. Why doesn't, if Helen Zille has such strong opinions and she still feels motivated to tweet her thoughts out every other day, maybe she should start a new party. I mean, like Julius did, like Robert Sobukwe did. You know, maybe there's some merit in having even more multi-party democracy.
And
then for people who are more hardline, they can leave the DA.
Yes. But remember that the DA, like the ANC, I mean, the politics of the late 90s and the early 2000s are interesting in that the National Party first amalgamated with the DP, the Democratic Party.
Right. Under Tony Leon.
When they found even Tony Leon too liberal, they walked away.
And who did they join?
They joined the ANC. So
the old regime and the new regime.
So there's a bit of there's a bit of National Party, which was, the National Party was more conservative than the DP.
Yeah.
But it found a far more comfortable home in the ANC after walking out of
Broadchurch.
The Broadchurch can accommodate you very nicely.
I just saw this comment. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's a lot coming through here on Twitter this morning. Songezo Zubi said, according to a News 24 article, which said Zilla's dumb tweets are the biggest headache for my money. Songezo Zubi said something interesting. He said they were a clear-headed expression of her views. Helen doesn't tick the dumb box. Dumb implies mistake. She's adamant.
No, she is adamant. I don't think that Helen Zille's tweets, in her mind, are problematic at all. This, in her mind, this is just what it is. And I think the article in the Daily Maverick was important for those who don't want to read about the economics of Singapore, although I found that that's fascinating and I've known about the Lee Kuan Yew theory for a long time. But the very end of that article where she says about becoming African nationalist and so forth, is really where the nub of the thing is. And she feels that white South Africans are embattled, are under siege, and that they can't speak at all. She essentially has some very strong views, I think, about how the new South Africa has evolved and the ability or inability of white people to participate fully in the democracy. I disagree with her totally. I think that she's it's a fig leaf. I think it's the idea of one's ideas being challenged that she's finding difficult. There are far more young people now who say, no, you can't say that, than there have been in the past. So,
well, I don't think "you can't say that" is ever a good response, even if it's nonsense that someone's speaking.
It's not "you can't say that." It's "I will take you up on that. So let's have a fight."
That's good.
And people have the fight. Not keep quiet, keep it under the radar. So I think she's finding that difficult to handle. And I think she's a bit at sea there. That said, it's always interesting, and these things come back to bite all of us. To stand up and and look at the guy like, and the Mcebo Dlamini thing gets trotted out now and say, yeah, he said Hitler and so forth, and everyone was up in arms. And then you say, you know, colonialism was had its positive aspects, and you don't see the hypocrisy of that whole thing and so forth and so forth. At the end of the day, I think that this thing hurts the new leadership of the DA. It's going to hurt Musi Maimane. Because
it's playing right into the hands of those people who think he's just a puppet.
Who accuse him of being a puppet. And so whether he, whatever the tribunal is in the DA, whichever way it acts, it's not going to be a comment on Helen Zille per se. It's going to be a comment on, oh, this guy says he's in charge. And then people start looking back and said, if it was Tony Leon, he'd have taken out. He's not ruthless enough.
Well, yeah. Even Tony Leon said they got to fire Helen Zille, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, it's almost like she's been made she's created her own scapegoating process here almost.
Yeah. But one of the things that's interesting is also the divisions inside the DA. I mean, one of the things that hasn't been charted properly is what happens to a party that is growing and grows fast. The DP was at 1.7% in 1994. It's quite something dramatic in 23 years to go from 1.7 to 27%. And so new people, new ideas, a lot of the guy who won the leadership of the ANC, of the DA in the Western Cape, it's a former ANC guy, former COPE guy, and comes with a whole lot of other traditions, which integrate into the DA and changes it. A party that's grown so fast will have its problems. Its problems of what is the line of march? Who are we? What is our ideology? What is liberalism in the context of a deeply racialized past? How do we deal with BEE? Is BEE even an idea that liberals should embrace, or liberals in the DA should embrace? So there's a whole vast range of things there that are quite challenging for the DA. But I think at the end of the day, this is about Musi Maimane and the future of the DA.
Oh, I just got a tweet from Mzwanele Mani. Do you want to hear what he said? I was referenced in a tweet of his. Do you want to hear it?
Okay, then.
I mean, he's got such credibility. Let's take a listen. He says, he's talking to Feriel Hafiji about something she wrote about Helen Zille. I don't know how I come into this, but he goes, I read your at Gareth Cliff approach to freedom of speech where you defended Zille's colonialism praise. You are so wrong. How do I fit into this? Why is he mentioning me?
You know, Gareth Cliff,
I'm so quiet on Twitter these days.
You need to know that in certain intellectual circles,
I'm the straw man.
Yes. When I must say, I loved someone calling him former Jimmy. But when Mzwanele Mani has a whiskey at the end of the day.
Yo, he also shouldn't be tweeting. He and Helen Zille should have their phones taken away. They're both too old and irrelevant.
No, but you see, Mzwanele Mani tweets and he doesn't say he's not an ANC leader. He's just a troll. That's the thing. Mm. He's not hurting. He might hurt the Gupta family, or he might hurt because, you know, they're his associates. But other than that, you know.
Let him.
He just trolls. He's like a fart. I mean, no one's hurt. So
slightly unpleasant, but it won't kill
you. No, there's a bit of smell, but that's about it. So
well, there's the quote of the day.
I'm just saying here that that Helen Zille can't just say oops, sorry.
In other words, you're saying we set a higher standard for her than we do for Zwane Limani.
That's the point. But I agree with you one thing, and I think this is something that this country needs to. When you first started, you asked me about two incidents, the Spear incident and Helen Zille. This country needs to be careful that it keeps its eye on the ball. We have a painful past. We have a whole vast range of things that we need to fix. And we can talk and talk and talk. But we, at the end of the day, when we walk out of here, when we walk in here, we're trying to fix those major, major things. Unemployment, education, jobs. A new society where people have dignity and a job. For me, that is absolutely paramount.
And the biggest actor in all of this is the government.
The state needs to be capable, needs to be able to do its work. Now, because of our history, you have the kind of stuff that happens at Spur, and it takes over for a day and then 2 days and so forth and so forth. These are problems, and they will crop up in our society. But let's not get distracted from the real issues. And what's happening? I'll tell you, you mentioned just tangentially the SA Revenue Service. If the Revenue Service doesn't pay Sears Business its VAT back, he has cash flow problems. He has to tell his workers, oops, sorry, guys, we can't be paid. And then in a month, we have to shut down the business. So there are thousands of small businesses which haven't got their refunds, and they're going under. And they will continue to go under. So the sales story is, I absolutely agree with you, it's far more important to people who are doing something about this economy than so much else.
Well, you see, it's also just that the deck is completely arranged in their favor. You have to pay on invoice.
Yeah.
And that means that if you are owed money back for your expenses, legitimate stuff that's written into the law, and they don't pay you, you don't have recourse, really. That's why, you know, they've had to appoint Bernard Ngwepe to go and take a look at all of this stuff for us.
And, you know, that it had to come out from outside, from the deputy minister saying, you know, this has gone nuts. It shows you there's something happening at SARS that we should be very worried about. For me, it's one of the institutions that need help. And another institution that needs help is the Hawks. For a second time, a court said his appointment as the head of the Hawks was invalid and shouldn't have happened at all. But the police minister is protecting him, and that's a big
and Pastor Mbor.
Well, I mean, incredible happenings will happen right there. So, I think we need to be, race is an issue. Race is a very big issue. But there is one way to, deal with racists, and that's to keep working and to keep performing. And they can shout and shout. But they can't stop your humanity. But I'm a big believer in that. I do think that a lot of what happens and what we see is really distracts us from the real issues, at hand. And we shouldn't, you know, you could spend the whole day talking about the racism or no racism in Helen Zille's tweet in Spare and so forth, or two idiots having a fight, people, you know, throw F-bombs around in front of their kids and so forth and so forth. Or you could say, yeah, that's what happens. That's some of the strains in our society, but stay with the program. That's what we need more of, in my view.
Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure.
All right, we'll see you next week. I'm Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, every Thursday on cliffcentral.com at 7 o'clock. Coming up in a moment or two, we're going to speak to Darren from Virgin Atlantic. He's just got back from a little trip to New York. It's always nice to check in with him, and I heard they had an amazing time. We spoke to Aria Kelman on Monday morning when they were still there, and Darren's going to give us some of the details of what went down. Mm-hmm. Right, Sia? We're curious. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right, all of that and more on the way. Thank you, Justice. Good to see you, as always. There we go. Things are happening. It's Thursday. Short week this week. It's ridiculous. Tomorrow's Friday already. It feels like
it's
yesterday was
Tuesday,
Monday. I know.
But I'm not complaining.
No, I'll take it. We'll all take it. Lovely.
Hold on to me. Don't let me go. care what they know. First name is free, last name is dumb, but she will still believe.
Freedom. Pharrell Williams. You gotta love that guy.
King of cool.
Yeah. All right. Hey, before we get to Darren, I just quickly want to check in with Dumi Shamasha. Is he on the line? Oh, he's on the line. Good. Because Dumi Shaw. Yeah, you're going to say?
Yes. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Over to you.
I see
over
you
to
found
you,
the
boss.
Lord while you were out in Austin, Texas. I see you found the Lord while you were out in Austin, Texas.
I did. How do you know? Listen.
Having some church up in there.
Dude, I have got to congratulate you. We spoke to Slubi yesterday, and then I remembered suddenly she's not the only one in our family who has been winning awards left, right, and center. Congratulations to you, man.
Thank you for reaching out, man, putting me on the show about that. You know, that means a lot. Thank you so much.
Well, for how many years?
I love the music.
You've been plying your trade. You've been showing the world how South Africans can act in the biggest and most important roles. And it's about goddamn time you got some credit for it.
Oh, well, thank you, man. This one was a credit for actually producing. So it's a team effort. I really have to mention my other production partners in this. Sean Nagy being one of them. Ari Stilla, Nonkululeko, our last production partner. And, of course, the writer and director, Brad Katzen.
Mm.
So we're like one of those, you know, proper BE teams, you know, but we didn't try. It's just a couple of guys that came together. And we just liked each other, really, really. Like Ari and Brad are the Jewish guys. You would think that they'd bring the money, but it's actually Sean Knighty. He's the Indian guy. You have to have an Indian. We have a black woman. And then there's Simi Shamasha. I'm unclassifiable. I can be white. I can be black. I can be Indian. I'm not sure if I can be colored, though. I've never been that. Yeah.
Well, listen, these kinds of collaborations are always a lot of hard work, but if you get the right team together, it just seems to come together really beautifully. And I suppose that's what's happened here, right, Dumisha?
It is all about the team, you know, Darius. It's about people having a passion for what they do. We're very fortunate that the kind of team that we had that came through are people with some experience in the industry, quite a bit of experience. And, of course, they just love what they do, and we actually are a great team. We enjoy each other's company, and we have the same ideas when it comes to films.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm very, very impressed with everything you managed to do, and most people only can keep down one or two jobs. You keep down like 23 at the same time. I don't know how you do it.
I just like doing everything. I love what I do. I love being on Cliff Central, so I'm not giving that up anytime soon. Even my production partners know that Thursdays, 11 to 12, you know, they know where to find me, Cliff Central, on the weekly mashup.
Are you, you're on today?
I'm on today. I'm actually, just took a run, so I'm ready for a great day today, coming on to a studio. We've got a great lineup today. I think everyone should listen if they can. And, of course, catch the podcast if they can't.
I'm impressed. You went for a run today. You know, when we talked to Slubi yesterday, we spoke to her about like 6:15 in the morning, and she was already on her way to the gym. And I said the team here, when we get hold of you, we'll do it a little bit later, because I'm pretty sure you'll roll out of bed around 8. I take that back. How rude. I take it back. You deserve more credit than that.
No, you're completely right, Gareth. There was a time, I think probably if you had called me a couple of months ago, like at the end of last year, I would have been very upset that you're calling me right now. I probably would have been hungover or something like that. But, you know, 2017 is a new year, new lifestyle changes. I'm tired of actually just not feeling great. I'd like to fit into my old jeans again. I really miss some of the old clothes that I have in my cupboard. So we're doing new things. But, you know, nice. It's a lifestyle thing. I think I went through a time where I was quite down, you know, and when I'm down, I put on weight. I wish it was the other way around. People lose weight, I put on weight. And now I'm like, I'm feeling much better. Come on, man, get up, get out there, do something about it.
Love it. All right, Dumisha, we'll check in on your show a little bit later on.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
guys,
bro. Congratulations. Yeah, and well done again.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, man. Cheers. There's Dumisha Masha. Hey, where's Darren? Get him in here. Let me speak to him.
So much going on today.
Hey, how are you, dude?
Good yourself.
I'm in a very good mood. I don't know why. I have no idea why.
It's Fake Tuesday, a.k.a. Quarter to Friday.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have in front of us not only Darren Thomas from Virgin Atlantic, but also the fourth best dressed man in South Africa. fourth best dressed.
I'm still convinced that should be a sign you carry around.
Fourth best dressed around
absolutely.
My neck.
You yeah. should do it.
I should wear the trophy around my neck.
Have your own little,
done.
Exactly. Like done. Flavor Flav.
Yes, exactly. Flavor Flav.
Chain
big
going
clock.
On. Absolutely.
You guys
done.
Just,
I'll get it done.
You and Kelman and Roxy and Kyle Deutsch just did a little whirlwind trip to New York.
A little long weekend in New York City.
That's so
best
awesome.
Way to spend a weekend.
Wow,
yeah,
man.
It was incredible.
And I saw you guys up in the helicopter flying over the city, which must be just the most spectacular thing you could do because New York is, it's amazing from the ground, but from the air, it must just look like a movie.
It was on another level. It was really bucket list stuff. So fly Nyon, mm-hmm. you know, they're the guys that do the flips over Manhattan. You can choose where you want to go. We had it for half an hour and we're just like, take us to the best spots. And to see it covered in snow, Central Park, it was on another level. It was incredible. It really was.
Now, I asked Ari this on Monday when we spoke to him, but I was there on Wednesday last week, very briefly went to just caught the train into town and back so that I could catch my flight back to South Africa. But we had enough time to kind of walk around a little bit, and there was still ice and slush and snow everywhere. Was it mostly gone by the time you got
no.
there?
No. So just outside our hotel, there were still piles of snow along the streets.
Get
and
your
then
feet wet?
Got our feet wet Saturday,
so
Saturday
bad.
As we came out of the
freezing.
Subway. For a little bit of a brunch in Chelsea, started snowing. So
uh-oh.
Like Aria said, perfect for Instagram.
Yeah.
So we all stood there for about 20 minutes just taking photos for Instagram. So those should go up soon.
All right. Now, one of the best things about doing anything with Virgin Atlantic is you guys have a totally different way of doing things on board the plane. People, it's almost like a party. You don't just sit in your seat and just behave yourself and go all the way there and come all the way back and nobody talks to anyone except the people next to them. It's very social.
Very social. So we're an experience.
Yeah.
That's it at the end of the day. So we are not just getting you from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
We are the experience that gets you from point A to point B. You know, so you're
that's
starting,
always the thing you look forward to the most.
That's it. It is. You know, and Ariere and Roxy and Kyle were all sitting at the bar having a couple of drinks.
And Kyle messed his drink all over himself.
Kyle messed his drink
what
on himself.
Disgrace.
So, you know, it's what we do. It was a bit of fun.
What else did you get up to in New York?
We experience New York, you know, as millennials do. We don't go and look at the big tourist sites and, you know, do all those sort of things. We get immersed in
what,
the city.
You mean you didn't go to the Statue of Liberty?
We saw it from the sky. What more do you need to
that's
see?
That's great, yeah.
You know, we don't need to take the ferry across and freeze.
No, what do you want
freeze?
To stand at the bottom
why
of that statue
stand?
For?
Exactly. So, you know, we really immerse ourselves in the city as locals do. So we did the brunches and we did the drinks at the Standard. We went to the Ganzevoort. We just
what
wondered
is that?
The Ganzevoort's a hotel in the Meatpacking District. It's a really trendy hotel up on the rooftop. They've got an amazing bar, also incredible views of the
nice.
City.
I haven't been there.
So had a bit of a party
sounds
there.
Great.
You know, we did
you meet some
the
of the locals.
Do.
What did they do?
Oh,
any interesting people you bump into?
There were so many people. You know what? New York is just this,
nobody famous.
No one famous except Roxy Berger and Kyle.
Yeah, well,
you know that's it. That's
come
it. Those
on.
Are the two famous people there.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. So, what's the next plan for you guys? Because it sounds like you've got an agenda of really exciting stuff happening, and you're making everybody else jealous. Come on. What's the next?
Plan? Aria and myself have to talk about that and see what's coming up next. But in terms of Virgin Atlantic, you know, we're starting a route to Seattle.
That's
so
cool.
There's a big inaugural happening next week. That's really exciting.
Nice.
But yeah, lots of things happening at Virgin. So let's
good,
we just
man.
Need to see what happens with Virgin and Cliff Central.
Always good to check in with you. And I wish you luck. And let's please, the next time I see you, at least second best dressed man in South Africa. I mean, you are, you have all the ingredients here. Who the hell are these idiots who got ahead of you on the list? How dare they?
Next time, don't
yeah,
worry.
Right, exactly.
Cool.
He says it with
sick.
A very serious tone.
No, he means it.
Voice.
I know,
like,
he wants
next
to win.
This is business. This is serious
cutting
business.
All these people out, absolutely.
You know?
he's not here to mess around. Are you kidding me? All right, listen, when we come back, we got our favorite prof, David Block, coming in to talk
always
about.
Always looking up.
Looking up astronomy. We're going to talk about the exoplanets, Sia.
Excuse me now?
Yep. Exactly.
I'll That's learn whatever that means.
And pay attention, man. It's going to be fantastic. All and more on the way.
CliffCentral.com.